This is Conor Lennon from UN News. 2018 has been terrifying for Yemenis who've suffered from a conflict characterised by indiscriminate military attacks and the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. But in December, the tireless work of Martin Griffiths, the United Nations Special Envoy for Yemen, and his team bore fruit. The warring parties agreed to UN-brokered talks convened in Sweden, which led to a ceasefire agreement in and around the city and port of Hodeidah, which is critical to the flow of humanitarian aid desperately needed by much of the country's population. In an exclusive interview with Mr. Griffiths, Rima Baza, the chief of our UN News Arabic service, started by asking him to assess the success of the agreement reached in Sweden.
Well, I think, first of all, it's the sort of thing that only the United Nations as an organization can really address. And a good example of that is the fact that the ceasefire and withdrawal monitoring will be led by someone as experienced as Patrick Kamout, who has been many things in his career, including in the Kivus, but also military advisor. So we're really lucky to have him. And secondly, the Secretary General himself has been very invested in this and is very keen to get everything moving as quickly as possible. And it is within a week of the agreements in Sweden that we're going to see people moving onto the ground in Hodeidah. I think that's remarkable. It's still going to be a hard slog to make it work according to plan, but it's a good start. And so far, pretty much, the ceasefire in Hodeidah is holding.
The UN has two roles in Hodeidah, one through the Redeployment Coordination Committee, and you said General Kamerat is chairing this committee from the UN. What capacity does he have? How will they implement this role on the ground?
Well, that is something which the Secretary General will describe in some detail in a report to the Security Council if, as we imagine will happen, a UN Security Council resolution is passed in the next day or so that will require that report. So I think the details of General Kamat's monitoring mission will come clear, partly when he's on the ground, but also in that report to the Council. But I imagine that what we're going to see there under his command are unarmed monitors who will be stationed in key locations throughout the city and port, and a fairly robust reporting mechanism. As you know, what is envisaged is a weekly report to the Security Council on compliance. I think that's very, very important, and it gives confidence to the parties and ourselves and the international community that the agreement will stick.
Can you give us any more details about the unarmed monitors?
But these unarmed monitors will depend essentially on the good faith of the two parties. And what's been very striking, even yesterday when General Kamet held his first meetings of this RCC, the committee he chairs, both sides expressed their full commitment to make the monitoring work. And we know that the leaders, at least, of those two representatives on both sides know each other very well and have worked together before. So that gives us some confidence. No ceasefire works simply through monitoring. It works through will of the parties. And nothing that I have heard from either side gives me doubt of that will. It doesn't mean to say it'll be easy, but the will, I am sure, is there.
And about the leading role in supporting the management of the port, when will this UN role start and how?
I think that's, as you pointed out, just as important. In fact, perhaps even more important than the ceasefire itself. The Lise Grandi, the exceptional resident and humanitarian coordinator, has, with her colleagues in the agencies, developed plans, quite detailed plans for this. We were very lucky in Sweden to have representatives from her office and from the World Food Programme who were with us, fully part of the team from the UN in Sweden mediating these agreements. So they've been fully involved in this from the start. And I know that the World Food Programme, which will play perhaps the lead role in reinforcing the operation of the Red Sea Port Authority, has already begun to think how that's going to be done.
And I have to ask also about the implementation of the exchange of prisoners agreement, because you mentioned this is a very important component in building also trust between parties. Is there any progress on this front?
There is progress. The advantage that we had with the prisoners exchange agreement was that, first of all, it was actually agreed before we went to Sweden, as you know, just in a few days before. And secondly, again, the two people on each side, the governor of Yemen, principally, and then Ansarallah, they know each other very, very well. They've negotiated on this issue. What's envisaged, which would be a remarkable day, is a release of 4,000 prisoners, 2,000 from each side, airlifted from one part of Yemen to another, from Sana'a to Hadramut and back, which would be an incredible moment, of course, for 4,000 families getting their sons and daughters back. But secondly, as a remarkable sign of hope for the people of Yemen. The International Committee of the Red Cross, which is also present in a support role in Sweden, has agreed to manage that airlift. I hope it works. It will be great if it does.
And how about the other issues that were not agreed on in Sweden, namely the reopening of the Sana'a airport and the central bank?
Yes, the reopening of Sana'a airport, which has been a vexed issue for years, and where we've hoped to make progress ever since I started in this assignment back in March, and particularly because the Secretary General is very forceful on this issue and very concerned that we make movement on it. We're still negotiating between the two sides to an acceptance of the essential components of the agreement that we hope to have in Sweden. We don't need to have another round of talks to get that agreement done. The government of Yemen has been very forceful again in wanting this agreement agreed. And I think Yemenis would like to find that they can fly in and out of Sana'a in a way that they have not been able to do for a couple of years. So we hope to make progress on that. The Central Bank of Yemen, an economic issue, is slightly more complicated. But in fact, what we would like to see happen is a first meeting, maybe in Amman, maybe somewhere else, of technical people within the Central Bank with the help of the IMF to make sure that there is transparent process for revenue collection, including, by the way, from the port of Hodeidah, as a basis for the payment of salaries throughout Yemen for all civil servants.
The outcome of the Sweden consultations was a breakthrough, but everyone is looking forward to the next round of consultations now. Can you talk to us about the main issues or what you would like to see discussed in these consultations?
What I hope we can achieve in the next round, and of course I'll need to go and seek the agreement of President Hadi on the timing and venue, as well as the Ansarallah leadership. But what we in the UN hope to see in the next round is a first discussion of the essential elements of a political solution to this conflict. In other words, what I hope to see is for those people who say Sweden was fine but was merely a humanitarian step forward to then agree and understand that the next round will be a political step forward. We have to address the main issues in order to make that progress and to give some kind of sense to Yemen and to the international community and the Security Council as to a kind of timing as to how quickly we'll be able to negotiate an end to the conflict. I think the next round will give us a much clearer idea on that, on these questions.
We all saw the positive outcome of the Sweden consultations, but backstage, did you have in any moment any doubts about the whole process?
Yes, throughout, really. We were so pleased just to get there and to see the two parties sitting across the table. That was a great moment. And then there were many people who said, well, look, that's fine. That's enough. That's an achievement already. And I think all of us involved in this, and I include in that the many, many ambassadors and diplomats who were present and the support of member states to get us there, they wanted a lot more than that, because it's quite a moment when people in a war like the conflict in Yemen decide to set down their weapons for a moment and sit down and talk to each other, first time for over 2 years, as you know. That's quite a moment, and you really have to get the benefit from it and not just allow it to be a simple confidence-building measure in itself. So personally, I was very, very keen to be sure that we could make movement on the key issues, including Hodeidah. Some people were quite skeptical of this, but remember this. We had been actively negotiating some kind of agreement on Hodeidah since May because of the humanitarian issues and worries about a conflict in the city and the port. So we knew a lot of where we wanted to go, and we were very fortunate that the parties in Sweden agreed with us.
You work closely with the Women Advisory Group. They were present during the consultations in Sweden. How did their input affect the whole process?
What was very good about this group of women, that's six of them, and we'd already also had them with us in Geneva in September, is that I met them every day, and they were able to mix very easily and very effectively, as you can well imagine, with all of the members of the parties in social, in the various buildings that we were working in. They weren't present at the formal negotiations and didn't expect to be, because that's a matter for the parties. But what they were able to do was two things. First of all, they were able to provide advice to the in an informal way to the members of the parties. And secondly, they were able to let me know and my colleagues know what was actually going on behind the scenes. So for us, they were a huge resource, which I hope will only improve and expand over time.
2018 is coming to an end, and everyone is looking back. If you looked back at this year, how would you describe it for Yemen?
It's a terrifying year because of the awful predictions of famine and of battle coming to their localities. A terrifying year for Yemenis. But as we moved through the year and we saw international opinion fix clearly on the need for a political solution, also a year eventually of hope, which is, I think, what we believe Sweden was able to produce right at the end of this year. But what it means is that 2019, if we're lucky, if the parties will it, can finally be a year when we put this conflict to bed. So 2018, I hope, will be the last year in which Yemen is at war.